This is Hidden Killers Half Year in Review. A look back at some of the most compelling cases of 2026 so far. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
If you really love me, you wouldn't give up on me.
Have you ever heard that? Has anyone ever tried to manipulate you with that steaming pile of BS? That sentence has kept more people in burning buildings than any lock ever made. It's the thing the addict says, the abuser says, the person whose chaos has consumed your entire life says, right before they ask for one more chance, one more loan, one more night on the couch. Please give me one more night. Give me just one more night.
Okay, I'm going into Phil Collins and I won't do that.
One more night. One more opportunity to prove that this time is different. Before I kill you and ruin your life, I'm gonna ruin your life. Ruin your life, because it's what narcissists do.
Original lyrics to One More Night. By Phil Collins. Or was that Genesis? I think it was Phil Collins, straight up. I don't remember. Good song, anyway. You stay. Because what kind of person gives up on someone they love? There's a whole genre of music guilting you to do it, right? We're talking about the Reiner situation here, but we're talking also about life in general here. And the example that this case puts out into the ether, because so many people have seen this thing and they've related to it in so many different ways. And it's been a reckoning, I would say, for many. Not just another, oh, if only he had been loved more, if only they cared more. No, it's been a reckoning of they did every damn thing they could and you're a piece of shit and you need to go away for the rest of your life. Because too many of us have done the yes, of course I love you. Of course I'm going to stand by your side. Of course I'm going to do that. Until it almost destroys us. And it has destroyed many. And they're not here to have that revelation or that reckoning. Because quite often the abuser is still alive and the person that was trying to take care of them isn't. We're going to get into all this, and this is the second part in our series we're doing all week about Nick Reiner and about this type of thinking and about being on the receiving end of the abuse from the monster, the Nick Reiner in anyone's life. And it doesn't have to be a child, doesn't have to be a lover. It could be a lover, it could be a child, it could be a friend, it could be a spouse, it could be a brother, it could be anybody. This type of person, this type of monster that leeches onto the other human being and sucks the life out of them until they're dead without regard, they will go for whatever prey happens to be in front of them. A lot of times they don't even know that that's what they're doing, but that's what they're doing. And when the end result is the same either way, does it really matter if they know what they're doing? Does it really matter if you, the one who's trying to help them and take care of them and save them? Does it really matter if that person ever has that realization of they're the monster? No, because they never will. You'll just have the realization of, oh, I'm about to die, either at their own hands or of exhaustion or something else horrible that takes you out because of the energy you're expelling on that piece of shit. If you're still with us, still alive to hear this, well, good. I don't want to say consider yourself lucky, but maybe that's luck might be part of it. And if you're confused as shit, well, we've all been there. It's okay. But listen up. Because you don't need to fall victim to the Nick Reiner of your world. As we go through this, give me your thoughts in the comments section. That could be on Substack, the link's in the description, or on YouTube. Comment section's right there. Here's the answer nobody wants to say out loud. Sometimes the only kind of person who survives Sometimes the only kind of person who survives is a person who makes the realization of understanding what that is all about. We're taught that love means staying. That real devotion means never walking away. Unconditional love gets thrown around like it's the highest virtue from people who don't understand a goddamn thing about the situation you might be living in right now. It's very easy to throw that term around. It's this, it's that. Yeah, well, wait till you have to exercise it against the devil. It's not the devil, it's someone you love. Yeah, it was. Until they started loving themselves far greater than anyone else around. And we all just kept going, well, we have to love them, even if they only seem to care about themselves at all. Do we? Unconditional love gets thrown around like it's the highest virtue, but somewhere along the way, unconditional love got twisted into unconditional proximity. They're not the same thing. You can love someone from a distance. You can love someone you never see again. You can love someone and still refuse to let them destroy you. That's not the message we get. The message we get is that walking away makes you the bad guy. That setting limits is abandonment. That if you really cared, you'd stay in the fire until either they got better or you both burned alive. And you know what? You're pretty much guaranteed that the latter will happen or you will burn alive. It's usually not a both situation. It's usually you, and they make it out because they're holding the fire extinguisher in their hands and a flamethrower on their back. So they'll flamethrow the shit out of you. And then when you're finally charred, let me use a fire extinguisher on you. Oh my gosh, they're gone. What happened? I wonder why this is. Just because they're holding both doesn't make them a hero. Robin Michelle Reiner stayed in the fire for over 17 years. 18 rehab stints, facilities charging tens of thousands of dollars a month, a guest house on their property so Nick could live close, a movie made together, Being Charlie in 2015, where father and son processed their pain through art and did a press tour about healing and recovery. They showed up to every family session. They funded every new approach. They reversed their position on boundaries after Nick convinced them the professionals had been wrong all along. They never stopped trying. They never walked away. And now they're dead. I'm not saying their deaths are a consequence for their devotion, but they are. They are. And I'm not saying their devotion was wrong. And as obscene as that is, it's reality. What happened to them is the responsibility of one person and one person alone. And I can't imagine being a parent and being in that situation. I'd be dead too. I would have kept trying till the end. At least I think I would. I don't know. It's impossible to say unless you're in that situation. But I am saying this. Their presence did not save Nick. I'm not blaming them for their deaths. But continually choosing to be there. And I'm not saying it was wrong, but if death was not the intended outcome, let this be a lesson to not make the same choices they did. Their love didn't fix him. Their willingness to help and to keep showing up, keep funding, keep hoping, none of it changed the trajectory. It just kept them in the path of it. But that's where they chose to be as well, because they thought, if I'm in the path of this out of control speeding train, maybe, and this is the crazy part with this, because I think, you know, especially when it's a kid, we think of these situations a little differently. And he's an adult, but he's still their kid. And I think they still saw their little boy. They saw their little boy. They saw, to a certain degree, being out there in that trajectory of that speeding bullet train that was out of control, which is what exactly it was at the time they were murdered. Their prism, the cognitive distortion that they had to live with in order to function, in order to continue being there for Nick, I think they probably still in their minds and in their hearts, they saw the little boy that was jumping into them that they were going to catch at the pool. Because it's still that person. It's still the same little person that used to, okay, jump, I got you. And you could catch them for a long time. You could save them. You could help them. But for like so many of us, if you have kids, you understand this. If you don't, you don't. You know, they grow. And some turn into wonderful adults that you can go swimming with. Probably don't want him to jump on you at some point because that might hurt you. But Nick wasn't even an adult jumping into the pool and mom and dad are waiting there to catch them. Although that probably would drown somebody too. He was the Titanic being launched into a swimming pool. And Rob and Michelle were standing there thinking, acting like, oh, we're going to catch, we're going to keep catching our little boy. As the Titanic fell on top of them and crushed them and sunk them to the bottom of the ocean under the weight and destruction of Nick. And right up to that last minute, their minds are still thinking, I'm going to catch my little boy. I mean, that's a parental love. That's one that no matter how much reasoning you put into something, doesn't necessarily change or go away. So as easy as it is for me to sit here and say, don't do this, don't do that. I don't, you know, do what you need to do. But just take into consideration this story as a cautionary tale. I've heard from so many parents who are going through this and we're not here to judge you. Just hear what I'm saying. And don't be run over by the Titanic. Because their love didn't fix him. Their willingness to keep showing up, keep funding, keep hoping, none of that changed the trajectory. It just kept them in the path of it. And if you're someone who's been told that your presence is the only thing standing between the person you love and total destruction, I need you to hear something. That belief is a trap, and it might be killing you. Here's how that trap works. It starts with guilt weaponization. If you leave, I'll use again. If you cut me off, I'll end up on the streets. If you stop helping, you're the reason I fail. It starts getting uglier. That threat is explicit or implied. Your departure will be the cause of their destruction, not their choices, not their patterns, not the 17 years of evidence that nothing changes. You leaving, that's what will finally push them over the edge because they can't be accountable for anything. So you stay.
because he can't live with being the reason. Even though, and this is the part your guilt won't let you see clearly, you were never the reason. You were never the thing keeping them afloat. You were just a soft landing that prevented the fall that might have actually saved them. Nick Reiner reportedly told his parents that if he didn't want to go to their suggested treatment programs, then I had to be homeless. That was the line, that boundary, the consequence. But it never held. Every time he got drawn, it got erased. A line got drawn, it got erased. Every ultimatum dissolved into another chance. The consequence of homelessness was always theoretical because Rob and Michelle couldn't stomach making it real. And I understand that. I am not here to judge parents who couldn't bear watching their son suffer, but I'm here to say that the consequence never materializing is part of what kept Nick exactly where he was. Some people will never hit bottom because someone is always there to catch them. Your hands outstretched, becoming the floor that prevents the fall. And sometimes the fall is the only thing that works. The second part of the trap is... sunk cost. You've already given so much. Years, money, sleep, relationships that couldn't survive your focus on the one person. Holidays ruined, savings strains. Your own mental health shredded by the constant vigilance, the constant disappointments, the constant cycle of hope and collapse. Walking away means all of that was for nothing. Every sacrifice wasted, every dollar burned. You've gone this far, why not keep going, right? Every sleepless night, pointless staying means maybe, just maybe, the next intervention will be the one that works and all this will be worth it. The next rehab, the next medication, the next conversation, you're staying because you believe it will work. You're staying because you can't accept that none of it worked. The Reiners had decades invested. The public redemption narrative, a film that told the world their son was healing, walking away, would have meant admitting that being Charlie wasn't a turning point, it was a performance. That the press tour about recovery was built on a lie, Nick admitted years later, when he told a podcast he wasn't actually sober during any of it. The sunk cost wasn't just money, it was identity. It was a story they told themselves and the world about their love and how it could accomplish anything. The third part of this trap is the fantasy of the final save. What if I leave? And that's when they're finally ready to change. The terror that your absence will be the thing that tips them into the abyss, and you'll spend the rest of your life knowing you weren't there for the moment. It could have been different. This is the hook that keeps people standing in the fire longer than any human should remain. Not for the person they love. Fear. Fear of being the reason hope died. Fear of the phone call that comes after you finally step back. Fear of living with the knowledge that you walked away. And then the worst happened. But here's what that fear won't let you see. The worst might happen anyway. The worst might happen because you stayed. The worst might be inevitable regardless of where you're standing when it arrives. Your presence is not a force field. Your love is not a cure. And your fear of what happens if you leave is keeping you in a situation that's destroying you without saving them. Rob Reiner brought Nick to that Christmas party because he was reportedly afraid to leave him home alone. A 77-year-old man couldn't attend a holiday gathering without bringing his 32-year-old son because the alternative felt too dangerous. It's not parenting. It's not supervision. That's a hostage situation where the hostage has convinced himself he's the warden. And this is the hardest part to say, but it needs to be said. And what would have happened? What would have happened if Rob and Michelle had walked away 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 1 year ago, if they said, we love you, but you can't do this anymore. You're not welcome in our home until you've been sober for a year, verified with no expectation, with no exceptions. Would Nick have spiraled? Probably. Would he have ended up homeless again? Maybe. Would he have hit a bottom that finally cracked through the manipulation, the entitlement, and the decades of soft landings? Nobody knows. Would Rob and Michelle still be alive? Nobody knows that either.
But we know what happened when they didn't walk away. We know how the story ended. And I'm not telling you to assign blame. I'm telling you so that you understand staying does not guarantee a good outcome. If that's where you are, staying just guarantees you're there for whatever comes next. So here's what I need you to hear. You are allowed to stop. Not because you don't love them. Because you do. Not because they're hopeless. Because you're not the thing that will save them. Not because you're giving up. Because you're finally giving yourself permission to survive. Walking away doesn't mean you stop loving someone. It means you stop letting their chaos write your story. It means you recognize that your presence isn't fixing anything and might be preventing the only thing that could. It means you accept that you've done everything you can and everything you can isn't enough. That's not a failure on your part. That's just the truth of loving someone whose destruction is beyond your control. Giving up is a phrase designed to keep you in the fire. The person who uses it against you is not asking for your help. They're asking for your destruction on the installment plan. They're asking you to sacrifice your peace, your health, your relationships, your future, one day at a time, one crisis at a time, one last chance at a time until there's nothing left of you to give. And when you're finally empty, they'll find someone else to drain because it was never about your help. It was about your presence as a resource to be consumed. The Reiners never walked away. They stayed through 18 rehabs, through homelessness in four states, through a destroyed guest house, through a son who admitted on a podcast to gaming every system designed to help him, to stealing pills for sick people, to faking his way through recovery while getting high on rooftops. They stayed until there was nowhere left to stand. You don't have to. Walking away isn't betrayal. It's not abandonment. It's not proof that you didn't love them enough. It's the recognition that love by itself cannot fix what's broken in another person. It's the acceptance that your limits are not character flaws. They're survival mechanisms. It's the decision to stop setting yourself on fire to keep someone else warm when they won't even stand near the flame. It's someone in your life, if someone in your life, I should say, has made your boundaries the enemy, made your self-preservation into evidence of your failure to love them properly, made every act of self-protection feel like an act of violence against them, that's not love asking anymore. That's manipulation wearing love's mask. You're allowed to take it off them. You're allowed to see it for what it is. You're allowed to walk out of the burning building even if they refuse to follow. Rob and Michelle Reiner loved their son with everything they had. They gave him money, time, opportunity, forgiveness, second chances, third chances, 18th chances. They made a movie with him. They rewrote their own beliefs to accommodate his narratives. They kept him close, even when keeping him close meant living in fear. And none of it was enough because it was never going to be enough because the thing that needed to change was inside Nick. And no amount of external love can reach the place where that change has to happen. If you're waiting for permission to stop, to step back, to set limits, to protect yourself from someone whose chaos has consumed your life, consider this your permission. You've done enough. You've given enough. You've stayed long enough. I can't tell you what's going to happen next. I can't say it's going to end well. But the next chapter of your life doesn't have to be written by their destruction. You're allowed to pick up the pen yourself. Your thoughts. Tell me in the comments section. Tell me on YouTube or on our Substack. If you got a story to share, a lot of people watch these and it becomes kind of a cathartic thing. And everybody kind of helps each other. There's a lot of us out there. Again, this doesn't have to be something where this is your child. It can be a relationship. It can be a spouse. It can be someone you were in. This could be years ago. This is years ago for me. I'm speaking from experience, from relationships past, from people I've been involved with. and understanding the toll this shit takes. And I hope that by through that, through this passion of sharing this insanity, others who are maybe very early on that path or somewhere on that path still can find a moment to see the light at the end of that tunnel and go, I'm going there. I'm not turning back into the flames because that person is like, you don't love me then. No, I do. And I love myself too. And I'm going to go out this way. And I hope to God you follow me because I love you. And if you don't, well, that is up to you. I just hope you love yourself enough to make the right choices as well, because I can't keep killing myself. That's what you need to tell yourself. Again, your thoughts in the comments section, YouTube, Substack, the links are in the descriptions. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening to this or watching this, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, wherever it may be. Hit subscribe if you're finding this valuable. A review on Apple Podcasts, tremendously helpful. If you've got a few seconds, please drop us one there. Until next time, we'll continue this in the comments. I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
I'm petrified of Nick. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I'm afraid of my son. I think my own son can hurt me. Rob Reiner said those words out loud at a Christmas party surrounded by some of the most connected, powerful people in Hollywood. That was Saturday night, December 13th. And by Sunday afternoon, Rob and his wife, Michelle, were dead. Stabbed multiple times in the master bedroom of their Brentwood home. Their daughter, Romy, found them. He said it out loud to a room full of people, and then he went home. One of the guests reportedly left the room in tears after hearing Rob's confession, and then nothing. No call to police, no intervention. No one stopped Rob at the door and said, you know, you can't go back there. Just the shared weight of terrible knowledge carried silently into the night while a man walked back into the house where he would die. Not here to relitigate what happened that night. I'm here to talk about something else, something that doesn't get discussed in the analysis, the legal analysis, or the psychiatric evaluations, or the cable news panels. I want to talk about what it feels like to be the person who sees the ending before it arrives and can't stop it. Because if you've ever loved someone dangerous, someone destructive, someone whose trajectory was visible to everyone, including you, you know exactly what Rob Reiner felt standing in that room. The dread, the certainty, and the complete inability to change the outcome. You felt the weight of knowing something terrible is coming and being powerless to stop it. And you've carried the specific corrosive guilt that comes after, the guilt of foresight that couldn't save anyone. This isn't about hindsight. Everyone has hindsight. This is about the people who saw it coming in real time and still couldn't alter the course. The people who said it out loud, who warned others, who lay awake at night running scenarios and watched it happen anyway. We tell ourselves a lie about awareness. We treat it like a superpower. Like if we can just see clearly enough, name the danger accurately enough, stay vigilant enough, we can prevent the disaster. I know what he's capable of. Feels like armor. It feels like protection. It feels like control. But it is none of those things. Rob Reiner knew. He said it out loud in front of witnesses hours before his own death. Danny Spillar, Nick's roommate,
from a Malibu rehab facility when they were both 15, told the Daily Mail, "As soon as I saw that Rob Reiner and his wife were murdered, I knew exactly who it was. He wasn't alone." Multiple people close to the family said the same thing. This wasn't hidden. This wasn't a secret that only emerged after the bodies were found. The danger was visible, documented, discussed. And in the end, it didn't matter. Seeing the train doesn't stop the train. Especially when you're standing on the tracks because you love the person driving it. That's why this has been such a, I think, relatable story for so many. And all this week, I'm going to be putting out a series of videos on various aspects of being in the shoes of Rob and Michelle. Or if you're someone who has dealt with or is currently dealing with an addict or someone with a mental illness, that you see the writing on the wall, you see the dangers, but you're there still because you love them. These videos are for you. I'd love to get your thoughts in the comment section as you watch or listen to them. Substack, the link is in the description, hiddenkillers.substack.com or on our YouTube page. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Seeing the train doesn't stop the train. And unfortunately, for those of us who've been in this situation dealing with someone who's an addict or is mentally ill, we're always trying to see that train, aren't we? We're like, oh, there's the engine. And there I am being run over by it. Seeing it didn't necessarily stop it, did it? But so much of our modality leading up to the crescendo, leading up to the chaos explosion moments, they don't necessarily prevent them. It's just like, yeah, well, here it comes. Here's where it gets cruel. When you're the person who sees it coming, you become responsible in your own mind for everyone who doesn't act. Again, in your own mind, this is going on. Rob told someone at that party. That person left the room in tears and did nothing. The other guest heard it and did nothing. And somewhere in the calculus of grief and guilt, the person who spoke the warning carries weight for all the people who heard it and didn't respond. You start to believe that if you had just said it differently, more urgently to different people, maybe someone would have done something. Maybe you would have been taken more seriously. Maybe the outcome would have been different. But what are they supposed to do? What can they do? If only. It wouldn't have been. But you can't know that. So you carry it anyway. There's another trap that comes with knowing, the false negotiation, the belief that if you just stay close enough, you can manage the danger. You can see it coming. You can position yourself to intercept it, to prevent that danger, that madness that that person is about to inflict on everyone around them. If you can absorb it, be that shield. This happens a lot in paternal type scenarios where you're the parent looking out for whatever that incoming rocket is. Sometimes it's the other parent. Sometimes it's some other outside source. But if you can handle it, then that person's going to be okay, because half the time they're okay. The other half, they're a raging lunatic and dangerous. But that one little half, that other half you hold on to. Rob Reiner brought Nick to that Christmas party because, according to reports, he was afraid to leave him home alone. I mean, we go back to that a lot. He didn't bring his son to a party because he wanted to. He brought him because of the alternative. Leaving him unsupervised felt more dangerous. And we may be telling ourselves, he may have been telling himself that was caregiving. That's hostage behavior. When you actually shine a light on it, that's not caregiving.
That is hostage behavior. That's a man who believed his proximity was the only thing standing between his son and catastrophe. And in a terrible way, he was right. His proximity was the only thing standing between his son and catastrophe. It just wasn't protecting him from the catastrophe. It was putting him directly in its path. When you love someone dangerous, you convince yourself that your presence is the thing keeping disaster at bay. And you don't even necessarily use the word dangerous. I think if you're listening to this right now or watching this going, dangerous, that sounds extreme. But I mean, honestly, ask yourself, that person in your life that you're feeling this way about, that you're going, I can relate to this, are they not dangerous? Or are they? And that's just not a term you want to use. When you're the guardrail, the buffer, the human shield between them and the worst version of themselves. And that means if disaster happens, it's because you failed. At least that's what we seem to tell ourselves sometimes. You weren't present enough. You weren't watchful enough. Weren't positioned correctly. The disaster becomes your fault. And that's how they want it. That's how they get you there. Not because you caused it, but because you believed you could prevent it and didn't. Rob Reiner went home that night believing, I suspect, that keeping Nick close was safer than leaving him alone. He was managing the risk. He was doing what he'd done for years, staying in the room with the danger because leaving the room felt like abandonment. And that calculation, that impossible math of love and fear, is what put him in the bedroom where he died. After it happens, after the thing you saw coming finally arrives, the knowing becomes its only wound. Every moment of awareness transforms into an indictment. I knew he was capable of this because I knew, and I didn't stop it. I saw the signs because I saw the signs and stayed away. I warned people because I warned people and no one listened. And maybe if I had warned them differently or louder or sooner, the spiral is endless. The person who didn't see it coming gets to grieve cleanly. Their loss is uncomplicated by culpability, even imagined culpability. But the person who saw it coming grieves while drowning in I should haves. Every red flag you identified becomes evidence of your failure to act on it. And these are cognitive distortions to reality. But it doesn't stop you from failing them. Every conversation where you said, I'm worried, becomes proof that you knew you and you didn't do enough. You don't just lose the person, you lose yourself in the infinite loop of retrospective responsibility. And nobody tells you when you're the one who saw it coming that knowing doesn't protect you. No, it doesn't. It just means you get to suffer twice. Once in anticipation, once in reality. The person who didn't see the danger coming experienced the loss once when it happened. You experienced it over and over in every sleepless night, every anxious phone call, every time you checked to make sure they were still alive. You pre-grieved. You rehearsed the catastrophe, hoping that maybe these rehearsals, these running this through your minds till 5 a.m, will somehow better prepare you for the inevitable when it comes. You lived in the future where the worst had already happened while simultaneously living in the present where it hadn't happened yet, but definitely would. And when it finally arrived, you didn't even get the mercy of surprise, just the exhausted recognition that the thing you always knew would happen had finally happened. I hear you. A lot of people hear you, and you're not alone. Rob Reiner directed movies for 40 years. He understood story structure better than almost anyone alive. He knew how narratives work, how they build, how they telegraph their endings, how everything that happens in Act 1 sets up what happens in Act 3. He saw the signs, he knew the shape of the story, and knowing didn't give him a rewrite. It just meant he watched it unfold with a clarity that must have been its own kind of torture. And if you can relate to this, the same is probably true for you. If you're the person who saw it coming, your awareness didn't cause this. Your awareness didn't permit this. Your awareness didn't make you complicit in this. You saw what was happening because you were paying attention, because you loved someone enough to stay present to their destruction, because you couldn't look away even when looking was unbearable. That is not a failure. That's not guilt you should be carrying. That's love operating in an impossible situation, staying engaged with someone whose trajectory was visible and terrifying, hoping that somehow your presence, your vigilance, your willingness to keep showing up would be enough to change the math. And it wasn't. And that's not your fault. That's not Rob and Michelle's fault either. The hardest thing to accept, harder than the loss itself sometimes, is that you were never in control. The ending was always the ending. Your awareness didn't create it. Your awareness just meant you had to watch it approach in slow motion, powerless to change the speed or direction. You weren't a prophet who failed to prevent the prophecy. You were a person who loved someone dangerous enough to see them clearly and stayed anyway. Rob said out loud that he was afraid his son could hurt him. And then he went home. Not because he didn't know, because knowing was never enough. If you've ever walked back into a house, a relationship, a dynamic that you knew could destroy you, for whatever reason that may be, you don't need me to explain why he went home. You already understand. The love doesn't disappear just because the danger becomes visible. The hope doesn't die just because the evidence is overwhelming. You go home because going home is what you've always done, because the alternative is admitting that the person you love is beyond your reach, because standing outside safe while they spiral alone feels like its own kind of violence. You go home because that's what love does when it runs out of options. It stays, even when staying is the thing that kills you. The question isn't why Rob went home. The question is what you do now that you survived what he didn't. How do you carry the weight of knowing without letting it crush you? How do you forgive yourself for seeing something you couldn't stop? You start by understanding that your knowledge was not consent. Your inability to prevent this was not permission for it to happen. The fact that you saw it coming does not make you responsible for what someone else chose to do. You are not a failed guardian, not a failed partner, a failed parent, a failed brother, a failed sister. You are a person who loved someone through a nightmare, stayed present when anyone reasonable would have looked away, and carried a burden of awareness that no one should have to carry alone. The guilt you're feeling isn't evidence that you did something wrong. It's evidence that you cared enough to pay attention in a situation where paying attention was its own form of suffering. Rob Reiner saw it coming. So did a lot of people. And they went home anyway, stayed in the room anyway, kept trying anyway. Not because they were fools, but because they were human beings who loved someone past the point where love made any sense. And if that describes you, if you're the person who saw the ending before it arrived and still couldn't stop it in your own world, you're not carrying guilt you deserve. You're carrying grief. It doesn't have anywhere else to go. Put it down. Not because you've earned absolution through suffering, because the person you lost wouldn't want you to spend the rest of your life punishing yourself for a crime you didn't commit. The crime of seeing clearly. The crime of loving anyway. The crime of hoping right up until the end that somehow this time it would be different. It wasn't different. That doesn't mean you were wrong to hope. It means you were human. And being human in the face of someone else's destruction is not a sin you need to confess. It's just the price of admission to loving people who can't be saved. If this resonated with you, I'd love to get your thoughts in the comments section, either on our Substack or on YouTube. The links are in the description. Hiddenkillers.substack.com or YouTube, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. There's more in this conversation. There's more in this series that reflect on the chaos and the horror of the Reiner story. And bring it into our own worlds, our own traumas, our own situations of loving people that are purely destructive and surviving. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any of that. We'll take a big, even more deep dive into all of that throughout the week. So, hope you'll join us for it. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're getting this. If you're listening to us on the podcast platform, or if you're not yet, if you're just watching the video, hey, take us along with you in the car, wherever you go, on your walks, to the gym. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, and you can listen to us wherever you go. We do appreciate that. If you have a moment, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. That helps us a lot. If you're finding this valuable, thank you for that in advance. All right, until next time, my name's Tony Bruschi, and we'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.